The forts, Bonnot explained with an inscrutable expression, is reducing your Witcher rescuers to pulp. Go on, girl, draw your sword.
Shall I run away? She thought, frozen in terror. Flee to other places, to other times. If only I could get far from him, if only...
She felt shame.
How can I run away? Leave Yennefer and Geralt at their mercy.
But good sense told her.
I'm not much use to them dead.
She focused, pressing her fists to her temples. Barnard knew immediately what she was planning and lunged for her. But it was too late. There was a buzzing in Ciri's ears. Something flashed. I've done it, she thought triumphantly. And at once realized her triumph was premature. She realized it on hearing furious yelling and curses. The evil, hostile and paralyzing aura of the place was probably to blame for the fiasco. She hadn't travelled far, not even out of eyeshot, only to the opposite end of the gallery, not far from Bonnard, but beyond the range of his hands and his sword, temporarily at least. Pursued by his roar, Ciri turned and ran. She ran down a long, wide corridor, followed by the dead glances of the alabaster caryatids holding up the arcades. She turned once, and then again. She wanted to lose and confuse Bonnard, and furthermore, she was heading towards the noises of the battle. Her friends would be where the fighting was raging, she was sure. She rushed into a large round room, in the centre of which a sculpture portraying a woman with her face covered, most probably a goddess, stood on a marble plinth. Two corridors led away from the room, both quite narrow. She chose at random. Naturally, she chose wrongly.
The wench! Roared one of the thugs. We have her!
There were too many of them to be able to risk fighting, even in a narrow corridor, and Bonnard was surely nearby. Ciri turned back and bolted. She burst into the room with the marble goddess and froze. Before her stood a knight with a great sword, in a black cloak and helmet decorated with the wings of a bird of prey. The town was burning. She heard the roar of fire, saw flames flickering and felt the heat of the conflagration. The neighing of horses and the screaming of the murdered were in her ears. The black bird's wings suddenly flapped, covering everything.
Help! Sintra, she thought, coming to her senses. The Isle of Thaneth. He's followed me all the way here. He's a demon. I'm surrounded by demons, by nightmares from my dreams. Barnhart behind me, him in front of me.
The shouting and stamping of enemies coming running could be heard behind her. The knight in the plumed helmet suddenly took a step forward. Ciri overcame her fear. She yanked Swallow from its scabbard.
You will not touch me!
The knight moved forward, and Ciri noticed in amazement that a fair-haired girl, armed with a curved sabre, was hiding behind his cloak. The girl flashed past Ciri like a lynx, sending one of the approaching lackeys sprawling with a slash of her sabre. And the black knight, astonishingly, rather than attacking Ciri, slit open another thug with a powerful blow. The remaining ones retreated into the corridor. The fair-haired girl rushed for the door, but didn't manage to close it, although she was whirling her sabre menacingly and yelling. The lackeys shoved her back from the portal. Ciri saw one of them stab her with a pilum, saw the girl fall to her knees. Ciri leapt and slashed backhand with Swallow, while the black knight ran up on the other side, hacking terribly with his longsword. The fair-haired girl, still on her knees, drew an axe from her belt and hurled it, hitting one of the bruisers right in the face. Then she lunged for the door, slammed it, and the knight bolted it.
Phew, said the girl. Orkin iron! It'll take us some time to chop the way through that.
They won't waste time. They'll search for another way, commented the Black Knight soberly, after which his face suddenly darkened on seeing the girl's blood-soaked trouser leg. The girl waved a hand dismissively. Let's be away.
The knight removed his helmet and looked at Ciri.
I'm Caia Mawr Dyfran, son of Kialach. I came here with Geralt to rescue you, Ciri. I know it's unbelievable.
I've seen more unbelievable things, Ciri growled. You've come a long way, Caia. Where's Geralt?
He looked at her. She remembered his eyes from Thaneth dark blue and as soft as silk. Pretty.
He is rescuing the sorceress, he answered. That Yennefer! Let's go!
Yes, said the fair-haired girl, putting a makeshift dressing on her thigh. We still have to kick a few asses for Auntie.
Let's go, repeated the knight. But it was too late.
Run away,
whispered Ciri, seeing who was approaching along the corridor.
He's the devil incarnate, but he only wants me. He won't come after you. Run! Help Geralt!
Kaia shook his head. Ciri, he said kindly, I'm surprised by what you're saying. I came here from the end of the world to find you, rescue you and defend you. And now you want me to run away?
You don't know what you're up against.
Kaia pulled up his sleeve, tore off his cloak and wrapped it around his left arm. He brandished his sword and whirled it so fast it hummed. I'll soon find out. Bonnart, seeing the three of them, stopped, but only for a moment.
Aha, he said. Have the reinforcements arrived? Your companions, witcher girl? Very well. Two less, two more, makes no difference.
Ciri had a sudden flash of inspiration.
Say farewell to your life, Bonnart, she yelled. It's the end of you. You've met your match.
She must have overdone it, and he caught the lie in her voice. He stopped and looked suspiciously.
The Witcher? Really?
Kaia whirled his sword, standing in position. Bonnard didn't budge.
This witch has more of a liking for younger men than I expected, he hissed. Just look here, my young blade.
He pulled his shirt open. Silver medallions flashed in his fist. A cat, a griffin, and a wolf.
If you are truly a witcher,
he ground his teeth,
know that your own quack amulet will soon embellish my collection. If you're not a witcher, you'll be a corpse before you manage to blink. It would be wise, therefore, to get out of my way and take to your heels. I want this wench. I don't bear a grudge against you.
You talk big, Kaia said calmly, twirling the blade. Let's see if your bite's worse than your bark. Angoulême, Ciri, flee. Kair, run, he corrected himself, and help Geralt.
They ran. Ciri was holding up the limping Angoulême.
You asked for it.
Bonnart squinted his pale eyes and moved forward, whirling his sword.
I asked for it?
Kair, Mawr Dyfrin of Kialach, repeated dully.
No. It's what destiny wants.
They leapt at each other, quickly engaged, surrounding each other with a frantic kaleidoscope of blades. The corridor filled with a clang of iron, seemingly making the marble sculpture tremble and rock.
You aren't bad, rasped Bonnart when they came apart. You aren't bad, my young blade. But you're no witcher. The little viper deceived me. You're done for. Prepare for death.
You talk big.
Kaia took a deep breath. The clash had convinced him he had faint chance with the fishy-eyed man. This man was too fast and too strong for him. The only chance was that Bonnart was in a hurry to get after Ciri, and he was clearly irritated. Bonnart attacked again. Kaia parried a cut, stooped, jumped, seized his opponent by the belt, shoved him against the wall, and kneed him hard in the crotch. Bonnart caught him by the face, battered him powerfully on the side of the head with his sword pommel, once. Twice. Thrice. The third blow shoved Kaia back. He saw the flash of the blade. He parried instinctively. Too slowly. It was a strictly observed tradition in the Dyfrin family that all male members would hold a silent vigil lasting a whole day and night over the body of a fallen kinsman once he was inhumed in the castle armory. The women, gathered in a remote wing of the castle so as not to disturb the men, not to distract them or disrupt their reflections, would sob, keen and faint. When brought round, they sobbed and keened again, and da capo. Sobbing and weeping, even among women, Vicovarian noblewomen, was an unwelcome faux pas and a great dishonour. But among the Dyfrins, that and no other was the tradition, and no one ever changed it, or meant to change it. The 10-year-old Kair, the youngest brother of Ailill, who had fallen in Nazaire and was then lying in the castle armory, was not yet a man in terms of customs and traditions. He was not allowed to join the group of men gathered around the open coffin, and he was not permitted to sit in silence with his grandfather Grivith, with his father Kyalach, his brother Daran, or the whole collection of uncles and cousins. Neither was he permitted, naturally, to sob and faint along with his grandmother, mother, three sisters, and the whole collection of aunts and cousins. Kair clowned about and made mischief on the castle walls, along with the rest of his young relatives, who had come to Dan Dovre for the obsequies, funeral and wake. And he pummeled any boys who considered that the bravest of the brave in the fighting for Nazaire were their own fathers and older brothers, but not Ailill Ib Kyalach.
Kair, come here, my son.
In the cloister stood Maor, Kair's mother, and her sister, his aunt Chinaid Varanahid. His mother's face was red and so swollen from weeping that Kair was terrified. It shocked him that weeping could make such a monster out of such a comely woman as his mother. He made a firm resolution never ever to cry.
Remember, son,
Maor sobbed, pressing the boy so hard to her breast he couldn't catch his breath.
Remember this day. Remember who took the life from your dear brother Ailill. The damned Nordlings did it. Your foes, my son. You are ever to hate them. You are to hate that damned murderous nation.
I shall hate them, mother of mine,
Kair promised, somewhat surprised. Firstly, his brother Ailill had died the praiseworthy and enviable death of a warrior, in battle with honour. What was one to shed tears over? Secondly, it was no secret that his grandmother, Eviva, Maor's mother, was descended from Nordlings. Papa had more than once called his grandmother in anger She-Wolf from the North, behind her back, naturally.
Well, but if Mother is now ordering me...
I shall hate them, he pledged eagerly. I already hate them. And when I'm big and have a real sword, I'll go to war and chop off their heads. You'll see, Mum.
His mother took a breath and began sobbing. Aunt Chinaid held her up. Kair clenched his little fists and trembled with hatred. With hatred for those who had wronged his mamma, making her so ugly. Barnard's blow clove his temple, cheek and mouth. Kair dropped his sword and staggered, and the bounty hunter cut him between his neck and collarbone, using the force of a half turn. Kair tumbled at the feet of the marble goddess, and his blood splashed the statue's plinth like a pagan sacrifice. There was a boom. The floor trembled beneath feet, and a shield fell with a thud from a wall panoply. Acrid smoke trailed and crept along the corridor. Ciri wiped her face. The fair-haired girl she was supporting weighed her down like a millstone.
Quick! We must run quicker!
I can't run any quicker,
said the girl, and suddenly sat down heavily on the floor. Ciri saw with horror a red puddle begin to spill out and collect beneath the seated girl, beneath her blood-soaked trouser leg. The girl was white as a sheet. Ciri threw herself on her knees beside her, pulled off her scarf and then her belt, trying to apply tourniquets. But the wound was too severe and too near her groin. The blood kept dripping. The girl grasped her by the hand, her fingers as cold as ice.
Ciri?
Yes?
I'm Angoulême. I didn't believe we'd find you. But I followed Geralt. Because it's impossible not to follow him, isn't it?
It is. That's how he is.
We found you. And rescued you. And Fringilla mocked us. Tell me.
Don't say anything, please.
Tell me.
Angoulême was moving her lips slower and slower, and with greater difficulty.
Tell me. You're a queen, aren't you? In Sintra? We'll be in your good graces, won't we? Will you make me a countess? Tell me, but don't lie. Can you? Tell me.
Don't say anything. Save your strength.
Angoulême sighed, suddenly leaned over forward, and rested her brow against Ciri's shoulder.
I knew, she said quite clearly. I knew that a brothel in Toussaint would be a better fucking way of making a living.
A long, long time passed before Ciri realized she was holding a dead girl in her arms. She saw him as he approached, being led by the lifeless looks of the alabaster caryatids holding up the arcades, and suddenly understood that flight was impossible, that it was impossible to escape from him, that she would have to face him. She knew it, but was still too afraid of him. He drew his weapon. Swallow's blade sang softly. She knew that song. She retreated down the wide corridor, and he followed her, holding his sword in both hands. Blood trickled down the blade, heavy drops dripping from the crossguard.
Dead, he judged, stepping over Angoulême's body. Well and good. Your young blade has also fallen.
Ciri felt desperation seizing her, felt her fingers gripping the hilt so tightly it hurt. She retreated.
You deceived me, drawled Bonnart, following her. The young blade didn't have a medallion. But something tells me somebody will be found in this castle who wears one. Someone like that will be found. Old Leo Bonnart stakes his life on it, somewhere near the witch Yennefer. But first things first, viper. First of all, lass, you and me, and our nuptials.
Ciri got her bearings. Describing a short arc with Swallow, she took up her position. She began to circle him, quicker and quicker, forcing the bounty hunter to move around on the spot.
Last time, he muttered, that trick wasn't much use to you. Well, can't you learn from your mistakes?
Ciri speeded up. She deceived and beguiled, tantalized and hypnotized with flowing soft movements of her blade. Bonnart whirled his sword in a hissing moulinet.
That doesn't work on me, he snarled. And it bores me.
He shortened the distance with two rapid strides.
Play. Music.
He leapt, cut hard. Ciri spun around in a pirouette, jumped, landed confidently on her left foot, and struck at once without assuming a position. Before the blade had clanged on Bonnart's parry, she had spun past, smoothly moving in under the whistling blow. She struck again, without a backswing, using an unnatural, unorthodox bend of the elbow. Bonnart blocked, using the momentum of the parry to immediately slash from the left. She was expecting that, and all she needed was a slight bend of the knees and a sway of her trunk to move her whole body aside from under the blade. She countered and thrust at once. But this time he was waiting for her and deceived her with a feint. Not meeting a parry, she almost lost her balance, saving herself with a lightning-fast leap, but his sword caught her arm anyway. At first, she thought the blade had only cut through her padded sleeve. But a moment later, she felt the warm liquid in her armpit and on her arm. The alabaster caryatids observed them with indifferent eyes. She drew back and he followed her, hunched, making wide sweeping movements with his sword, like the bony death Ciri had seen on paintings in the temple.
The dance of the skeletons, she thought. The grim reaper is coming.
She drew back. The warm liquid was now dripping down her forearm and hand.
First blood to me, he said, at the sight of the drops splattering star-like on the floor. Who'll draw the second blood, my betrothed?
She retreated.
Look around. It's the end.
He was right. The corridor ended in nothingness, in an abyss, at the bottom of which could be seen the dust-covered, dirty and smashed-up floorboards of the lower story. This part of the castle was destroyed. There was no floor at all. There was only a framework of load-bearing timbers, posts, ridges, and a lattice of beams. She didn't hesitate for long. She stepped onto a beam and moved backwards along it without taking her eyes off Bonnart, watching his every move. That saved her. for he suddenly charged her, running along the beam, slashing with rapid diagonal blows, whirling his sword in lightning-fast feints. She knew what he was counting on. A wrong parry or mistake with a feint would have upset her balance, and then she would have fallen off the beam onto the smashed-up woodblocks of the lower floor. This time, Ciri didn't let the feints deceive her. Quite the opposite. She spun around nimbly and feinted a blow from the right, and when for a split second he hesitated, cut with the right seconde so quickly and powerfully that Bonnard rocked after parrying, and would have fallen if not for his height. He managed to hold onto a ridge by reaching up with his left hand, keeping his balance, but he lost concentration for a split second, and that was enough for Ciri. She lunged hard, fully extending her arm and blade. He didn't even flinch as Swallow's blade passed with a hiss across his chest and left arm. He immediately countered so viciously that had Ciri not turned a back somersault, the blow would probably have cut her in half. She hopped onto the adjacent beam, dropping onto one knee with her sword held horizontally over her head. Bonnard glanced at his shoulder and raised his left arm, already marked by a pattern of wavy crimson lines. He looked at the thick drops dripping downwards into the abyss.
"Well, well," he said, "you do know how to learn from your mistakes."
His voice trembled with fury, but Ciri knew him too well. He was calm, composed, and ready to kill. He leapt onto her beam, whirling his sword, went for her like a hurricane, treading surely without wobbling or even looking at his feet. The beam creaked, raining down dust and rotten wood. He pushed on, slashing diagonally. He forced her backwards. He attacked so quickly she couldn't risk a leap or a somersault, so she had to keep parrying and dodging. She saw a flash in his fishy eyes. She knew what was afoot. He was driving her against a post to the truss beneath the ridge. He was pushing her back to a place from where there was no escape. She had to do something. And she suddenly knew what. Caer Morhen. The pendulum. You push off from the pendulum. You take its momentum, its energy. You take its momentum by pushing off. Do you understand?
Yes, Geralt.
All of a sudden, with the speed of a striking viper, she went from a parry to a cut. Swallow's blade groaned, striking against Bonnard's edge. Simultaneously, Ciri pushed off and jumped onto the adjacent beam. She landed, miraculously keeping her balance. She took a few quick, light steps and leapt again back onto Bonnard's beam, landing behind his back. He spun around in time, made a sweeping cut, almost blindly, to where her leap should have carried her. He missed her by a hair's breadth, and the force of the blow made him stagger. Ciri attacked like a lightning strike. She lunged, dropping onto one knee. She struck powerfully and surely. And she froze, with her sword held out to the side. Watching calmly, as the long, slanting, perfectly straight slit in his jacket began to well up and brim a dense red.
"You!"
Bonnard staggered.
"You!"
He came for her. He was already slow and sluggish. She eluded him by leaping backwards, and he lost his balance. He fell onto one knee, but did not plant his other on the beam, and the wood was now wet and slippery. He looked at Ciri for a second. Then he fell. She saw him tumble onto the parquet floor in a geyser of dust, plaster and blood, saw his sword fly several yards to one side. He lay motionless, spread out, huge and gaunt, wounded and utterly defenseless, but still terrible. It took some time, but he finally twitched, groaned, tried to raise his head. He moved his arms, he moved his legs, he crept to a post and propped his back up against it. He groaned again, feeling his bloodied chest and belly with both hands. Ciri leapt down and fell beside him onto one knee, as softly as a cat. She saw his fishy eyes widen in fear.
"You won,"
he wheezed, looking at Swallow's blade.
"You won, Witcher girl. Pity it wasn't in the arena. It would have been some spectacle."
She didn't reply.
"It was I who gave you that sword. Do you remember?"
"I remember everything."
"Surely you want,"
he grunted.
Surely you won't finish me off, will you? You won't do it. You won't finish off a beaten and defenseless man. I know you, after all, Ciri. You're too noble for that.
He looked long at her. Very long. Then she bent over. Bonnart's eyes widened even more. But she just tore from his neck the medallions, the wolf, the cat, and the griffin. Then she turned around and walked towards the exit. He lunged at her with a knife, sprang at her dishonorably and treacherously, and as silent as a bat. Only at the last moment, when the dagger was about to plunge up to the guard in her back, did he roar, putting all his hatred into the bellow. She dodged the treacherous thrust with a swift half-turn and leap, swung her arm and struck quickly and widely, powerfully, with a full swing, increasing the power with a twist of the hips. Swallow swished and cut with the very tip of the blade. There was a hiss and a squelch, and Bonnart grabbed his throat. His fishy eyes were popping out of his head.
"Didn't I tell you," Ciri said coldly, "that I remember everything?"
Bonnart goggled even more, and then fell. He overbalanced and tumbled over backwards, raising dust. And he lay like that, huge, as bony as the Grim Reaper, on the dirty floor among broken woodblocks. He was still clutching his throat tightly with all his might, but although he squeezed hard, his life was draining away fast between his fingers, spreading out around his head in a great black halo. Ciri stood over him, without a word, but allowing him to see her clearly, so as to take her image alone, with him where he was going. Bonnart glanced at her, his gaze growing dull and blurred. He was shivering convulsively, scraping his heels over the floorboards. Then he uttered a gurgle of the kind a funnel gives just before it empties. And it was the last sound he made. There was a bang, and the stained glass windows exploded with a thud and a clink.
"Look out, Geralt!"
They jumped aside just in time. A blinding flash of lightning ploughed up the floor. Chips of terracotta and sharp shards of mosaic wailed in the air. Another flash of lightning hit the column the Witcher was hiding behind. The column broke into three parts. Half the arcade broke off the vault and crashed onto the floor with a deafening boom. Geralt, lying flat on the floor, shielded his head with his hands, aware of what poor protection they were against more than 10 tons of rubble. He had prepared himself for the worst, but things were not too bad. He got up quickly, managed to see the glow of a magical shield above him, and realized that Yennefer's magic had saved him. Vilgefortz turned towards the sorceress and pulverized the pillar she was sheltering behind. He roared furiously, sewing together a cloud of smoke and dust with threads of fire. Yennefer managed to jump clear and retaliated, firing at the sorcerer her own flash of lightning, which, nonetheless, Vilgefortz deflected effortlessly and with sheer contempt. He replied with a blow that hurled Yennefer to the floor. Geralt rushed at him, wiping plaster from his face. Vilgefortz turned his eyes towards him and a hand from which flames exploded with a roar. The Witcher instinctively shielded himself with his sword. The rune-covered dwarven blade protected him astonishingly, cutting the stream of fire in half.
"Ha!" roared Vilgefortz. "Impressive, Witcher, and what say you to this?"
The Witcher said nothing. He flew as if he'd been rammed, fell onto the floor and shot across it, only stopping at the base of the column. The column broke up and fell to pieces, again taking a considerable part of the vault with it. This time, Yennefer wasn't quick enough to give him magical protection. A huge lump broken off from the arcade hit him in the shoulder. The pain paralyzed him for a moment. Yennefer, chanting spells, sent flash after flash of lightning towards Vilgefortz. None of them hit the target, all harmlessly bouncing off the magical sphere protecting the sorcerer. Vilgefortz stretched out his arms and suddenly spread them. Yennefer cried out in pain and soared up into the air, levitating. Vilgefortz twisted his hands exactly as though he were wringing out a wet rag. The sorceress howled piercingly and began to spin. Geralt sprang up, overcoming the pain. But Regis was quieter. The vampire appeared out of nowhere in the form of an enormous bat and fell on Vilgefortz with a noiseless glide. Before the sorcerer could protect himself with a spell, Regis had slashed him across the face with his claws, only missing his eye because of its tiny size. Vilgefortz bellowed and waved his arms. Yennefer, now released, tumbled down onto a heap of rubble with an ear-splitting groan, blood bursting from her nose onto her face and chest. Geralt was now close, was already raising the scythe to strike. But Vilgefortz was not yet defeated and did not mean to surrender. He threw off the Witcher with a great surge of power and shot a blinding white flame at the attacking vampire, which sliced through a column like a hot knife through butter. Regis nimbly avoided the flame and materialized in his normal shape alongside Geralt.
"Beware," grunted the Witcher, trying to see how Yennefer was. "Beware, Regis."
"Beware?" yelled the vampire. "Me? I didn't come here to beware."
With an incredible, lightning-fast, tiger-like bound, he fell on the sorcerer and grabbed him by the throat. His fangs flashed. Vilgefortz howled in horror and rage. For a moment, it seemed as though it would be the end of him. But that was an illusion. The sorcerer had a weapon in his arsenal for every occasion and for every opponent. Even a vampire. The hands that seized Regis glowed like red-hot iron. The vampire screamed. Geralt also screamed, seeing the sorcerer literally tearing Regis apart. He leapt to his aid, but wasn't fast enough. Vilgefortz pushed the mutilated vampire against a column and shot white fire at him from close up out of both hands. Regis screamed so horribly that the Witcher covered his ears with his hands. The rest of the stained glass windows exploded with a roar and a smash, and the columns simply melted. The vampire melted along with it, fusing into an amorphous lump. Geralt swore, putting all his rage and despair into the curse. He leapt at Vilgefortz, raising his scythe to strike, but failed. Vilgefortz turned around and struck him with magical energy. The Witcher flew the whole length of the hall and slammed into the wall, sliding down it. He lay like a fish gasping for air, not wondering what was broken, but what was intact. Vilgefortz walked towards him. A 6-foot iron bar materialized in his hand.
"I could have reduced you to ashes with a spell," he said. "I could have melted you into clinker, like I did to that monster a moment ago. But you, Witcher, ought to die differently. In a fight. Not a very honest one, perhaps. But still."
Geralt didn't believe he'd be able to stand. But he did. He spat blood from his cut lip. He gripped his sword more tightly.
"On Thaneth."
Vilgefortz came closer, whirled the bar in a moulinet.
"I only broke you a little bit, sparingly, for it was meant to be a lesson. Since it wasn't learned, this time I'll break you thoroughly into tiny little bones, so that no one will ever be able to stick you back together again."
He attacked. Geralt didn't run away. He took on the fight. The bar flickered and whistled. The sorcerer circled around the dancing Witcher. Geralt avoided the blows and delivered his own, but Vilgefortz deftly parried, and then steel groaned mournfully as it struck steel. The sorcerer was as quick and agile as a demon. He tricked Geralt with a twist of his trunk and a feigned blow from the left and slammed him in the ribs from below. Before the Witcher could get his balance and his breath back, he was hit in the shoulder so hard he fell to his knees. He dodged aside, saving his skull from a blow from above, but could not avoid a reverse thrust from below, above the hip. He staggered and struck his back against the wall. He still had enough wits about him to fall to the floor, just in time, because the iron bar grazed his hair and slammed into the wall, sending sparks flying. Geralt rolled over, and the bar struck sparks on the floor right beside his head. The second blow hit him in the shoulder blade. There was shock and paralyzing pain. Weakness flowed down to his legs. The sorcerer raised the bar. Triumph burned in his eyes. Geralt clenched Fringilla's medallion in his fist. The bar fell with a clang, striking the floor a foot from the witch's head. Geralt rolled away and quickly got up on one knee. Vilgefortz leapt forward and struck. The bar missed the target again by a few inches. The sorcerer shook his head in disbelief and hesitated for a second. He sighed, suddenly understanding. His eyes lit up. He leapt, taking a swing. Too late. Geralt slashed him hard across the belly. Vilgefortz screamed, dropped the bar and staggered back, bent over. The Witcher was already upon him. He pushed him with his boot onto the stump of the broken column and cut vigorously, diagonally from collarbone to hip. Blood gushed on the floor, painting an undulating pattern. The sorcerer screamed and fell to his knees. He lowered his head and looked down at his belly and chest. For a long time he could not tear his eyes away from what he saw. Geralt waited calmly in position, with the scythe ready to strike. Vilgefortz groaned piercingly and raised his head.
Geralt!
The Witcher didn't let him finish. It was very quiet for a long time.
I didn't know,
Yennefer said at last, scrambling out of a pile of rubble. She looked terrible. The blood trickling from her nose had poured all over her chin and cleavage.
I didn't know you could cast illusory spells, she repeated,
seeing Geralt's uncomprehending gaze,
capable even of deceiving Vilgefortz.
It's my medallion.
Uh-huh.
She looked suspicious.
A curious thing. But anyway, we're only alive thanks to Ciri.
I beg your pardon.
His eye. He never regained full coordination. He didn't always land his blow. But I mainly owe my life to...
She fell silent, glanced at the remains of the melted column, in which the outline of a shape could be discerned.
Who was that, Geralt?
A friend. I'm going to miss him.
Was he a human?
The epitome of humanity. How are you, Yen?
A few broken ribs, concussion, twisted hip joint, bruised spine. Besides that, excellent. And yourself?
More or less the same.
She looked impassively at Vilgefortz's head, lying exactly in the centre of the floor mosaic. The sorcerer's small eye, already glazed, looked at them with mute reproach.
That's a nice sight, she said.
It is, he admitted a moment later. But I've already seen enough. Will you be able to walk?
With your help, yes.
And they met, all three of them, in a place where the corridors came together under the arcades. They met beneath the dead gazes of the alabaster caryatids.
Ciri, said the Witcher and rubbed his eyes.
Ciri, said Yennefer, being held up by the Witcher. Geralt, said Ciri.
Ciri, he replied,
overcoming a sudden tightening of the throat.
Good to see you again.
Madam Yennefer.
The sorceress freed herself from the Witcher's arm and straightened up with the greatest of effort.
What do you look like, girl?
She said severely.
Just look at you. Tidy up your hair. Don't stoop. Come here, please.
Ciri approached, as stiff as an automaton. Yennefer straightened and smoothed her collar and tried to wipe the now dried blood from Ciri's sleeve. She touched her hair and uncovered the scar on her cheek. She hugged her tightly, very tightly. Geralt saw her hands on Ciri's back, saw the deformed fingers. He didn't feel anger, resentment, or hatred. He felt only weariness, and a huge desire to be done with all of it.
Mama. Daughter.
Let's go.
He decided to interrupt them, but only after a long while. Ciri sniffed noisily and wiped her nose with the back of her hand. Yennefer shot an angry look at her and wiped her eye, which something had probably got into. The Witcher looked down the corridor from where Ciri had exited, as though expecting somebody else to come out of it. Ciri shook her head.
He understood.
"Let's get out of here," he repeated.
"Yes," said Yennefer. "I want to see the sky." "I'll never leave you both," Ciri said softly. "Never."
"Let's get out of here," he repeated. "Ciri, hold Yen up."
"I don't need holding up. Let me, Mama."
In front of them was a stairway. A great stairway drowning in smoke, in the twinkling glow of torches and fire in iron cressets. Ciri shuddered. She had seen that stairway before, in dreams and visions. Down below, far away, armed men were waiting.
"I'm tired," she whispered.
"Me too," admitted Geralt, drawing the sigh.
"I've had enough of killing."
"Me too."
"Is there no other way out?"
"No, there isn't. Only this stairway. We must, girl. Yen wants to see the sky. And I want to see the sky. Yen and you."
Ciri looked back and glanced at Yennefer, who was resting on the balustrade in order not to fall down. She took out the medallions taken from Bonnard. She put the cat around her neck and gave Geralt the wolf.
"I hope you know it's just a symbol," he said.
"Everything's just a symbol."
She removed Swallow from its scabbard.
"Let's go, Geralt."
"Let's go. Keep close beside me."
Skellen's mercenaries were waiting at the bottom of the stairway, gripping their weapons in sweaty fists. Tornial sent the first wave up the stairs. The mercenaries' iron-shod boots thudded on the steps.
"Slowly, Ciri. Don't rush. Close to me."
"Yes, Geralt."
"And calmly, girl. Calmly. Remember, without anger, without hatred. We have to get out and see the sky, and the men that are standing in our way must die. Don't hesitate."
"I won't hesitate. I want to see the sky."
They got to the first landing without mishap. The mercenaries retreated before them, astonished and surprised by their calm. But after a moment, three of them leapt towards them, yelling and whirling their swords. They died at once.
"Swarm them!" Tawny Owl bellowed from below. "Kill them!"
The next three leapt forward. Geralt quickly sprang out to meet them, deceived them with a feint, and cut one of them from below in the throat. He turned around, made way for Ciri under his right arm, and Ciri smoothly slashed the next soldier in the armpit. The third one tried to save his life by leaping over the balustrade. He was too slow. Geralt wiped splashes of blood from his face.
"Calmly, Ciri."
"I am calm."
The next three. A flash of blades, screams, death. Thick blood crawled downwards, dribbling down the steps. A soldier in a brass-studded brigantine leapt towards them with a long pike. His eyes were wild from narcotics. Ciri shoved the shaft aside with a diagonal parry, and Geralt slashed. He wiped his face. They walked on, not looking back. The second landing was now close.
"Kill them!" yelled Skellen. "Have at them! Kill them!"
Stamping and yelling on the stairs. The flash of blades, screams, death.
"Good, Ciri, but more calmly, without euphoria, and close to me."
"I'll always be close to you."
"Don't cut from the shoulder if you can from the elbow. Take heed."
"I am."
The flash of a blade, screams, blood, death.
"Good, Ciri."
"I want to see the sky."
"I love you very much."
"I love you too."
"Take heed, it's getting slippery."
The flash of blades, moaning. They walked on, catching up with the blood pouring down the steps. They walked down, always down, down the steps of Stygger Castle. A soldier attacking them slipped on a bloody step, fell flat on the ground right at their feet, and howled for mercy, covering his head with both hands. They passed him without looking. No one dared to bar their way until the third landing.
"Bulls!" Stefan Skellen bellowed from below. "Fire the crossbows! Boreas Munn was meant to bring the crossbows. Where is he?"
Boreas Munn, which Tawny Owl couldn't have known, was already quite far away. He was riding eastwards with his forehead against his horse's mane, squeezing as much gallop out of his steed as he could. Only one of the men sent for the bows had returned. The man who had decided to shoot had slightly shaking hands and eyes watering from fishtick. The first bolt barely grazed the balustrade. The second didn't even hit the stairs.
"Higher!" yelled Tawny Owl. "Go higher, you fool! Shoot from up close!"
The crossbowman pretended he hadn't heard. Skellen cursed at great length, snatched the crossbow from him, leapt onto the stairway, kneeled down and took aim. Geralt quickly covered Ciri with his body. But the girl slipped out from behind him like lightning, so when the bowstring clanged, she was already in position. She twisted her sword to the upper quarter and hit the bolt back so hard it somersaulted many times before it fell.
"Very good," muttered Geralt. "Very good, Ciri. But if you ever do that again, I'll tan your hide."
Skellen dropped the crossbow and suddenly realized he was alone. All of his men were at the very bottom in a tight little group. None of them were too keen to go up the stairs. There seemed to be fewer than there were before. Once more, several ran off somewhere, probably to fetch crossbows. And the Witcher and the Witcher girl, not hurrying, but not slowing either, walked down the blood-covered stairway of Stygger Castle. Close to each other, shoulder to shoulder, tantalizing and bamboozling their foes with fast movements of their blades. Skellen walked backwards and didn't stop, right down to the very bottom. When he found himself in the group of his own men, he noticed that the retreat was continuing. He swore impotently.
"Lads!" he yelled, and his voice broke discordantly. "On you go! Have at them! En masse! Go on, have at them! Follow me!"
"Go yourself, sir," mumbled one of them, raising a hand with fishtick to his nose.
Tawny Owl punched him, covering the man's face, sleeve, and the front of his jacket in white powder. The Witcher and the Witcher girl passed another landing.
"When they get to the very bottom, we'll be able to surround them," roared Skellen. "Go on, lads! Have at them! To arms!"
Geralt glanced at Ciri and almost howled with fury, seeing streaks shining white as silver in her ashen hair. He controlled himself. It wasn't the time for anger.
"Be careful," he said softly. "Stay close to me."
"I'm always going to be close to you."
"It'll be hot down there."
"I know, but we're together."
"We're together."
"I'm with you," said Yennefer,
following them down the stairs, red and slippery with blood.
"Form up! Form up!" roared Tawny Owl.
Several of the men who had run to get crossbows returned, without them, very terrified. The rumble of doors being forced by battle axes, thudding, the clanking of iron and the sound of heavy steps resounded from all three corridors leading to the stairway. And suddenly, soldiers in black helmets, armor and cloaks, with the sign of a silver salamander, marched out of all three corridors. On being shouted at thunderously and menacingly, Skellen's mercenaries threw their weapons on the floor, one after the other. Crossbows and the blades of glaives and bear spears were aimed at the more hesitant, and they were urged on by even more menacing shouts. Now all of them obeyed, for it was evident that the black-cloaked soldiers were extremely keen to kill somebody and were only waiting for a pretext. Tawny Owl stood at the foot of a column, arms crossed on his chest.
"Miraculous relief," muttered Ciri.
Geralt shook his head. Crossbows and spear blades were also being aimed at them.
"Glieder an Wort."
There was no sense in resisting. Black-cloaked soldiers were swarming like ants at the bottom of the stairs, and the witches were very, very weary. But they didn't drop their swords. They placed them carefully on the steps and then sat down. Geralt felt Ciri's warm shoulder and heard her breath. Yennefer descended, walking past corpses and pools of blood, showing the black-cloaked soldiers her unarmed hands. She sat down heavily beside them on a step. Geralt also felt the warmth against his other shoulder.
"It's a pity it can't always be like this," he thought.
and he knew it couldn't. Tawny Owl's men were tied up and escorted away one after the other. There were more and more soldiers in black cloaks bearing the salamander. Suddenly, high-ranking officers appeared among them, recognizable by the white plumes and silver edging on their suits of armor, and by the respect which the others showed in parting to let them pass. The soldiers stood back with even greater respect before one of the officers, whose helmet was particularly sumptuously decorated with silver, bowing before him. The man stopped in front of Skellen, who was standing at the foot of the column. Tawny Owl, it was very obvious, even in the flickering light of the torches and the paintings burning out in the cressets, paled, becoming as white as a sheet.
"Stefan Skellen," said the officer in a resonant voice, a voice which sounded right up to the vault of the hall. "You will be tried in court and punished for treason."
Tawny Owl was led away, but his hands weren't tied like the ordinary soldiers had been. The officer turned around. A burning rag broke off from a tapestry up above. It fell, swirling like a huge fiery bird. The brightness shone on the silver-edged armor, on the visor extending halfway down the cheeks, which was, like all the black-cloaked soldiers, shaped like horrendous toothed jaws.
"Now our turn," thought Geralt.
He wasn't mistaken. The officer looked at Ciri, and his eyes burned in the slits of the helmet, noticing and registering everything. The paleness, the scar on her cheek, the blood on her sleeve and hand, the white streaks in her hair. Then the Nilfgaardian turned his gaze onto the Witcher.
"Vilgefortz?" he asked in his resonant voice.
Geralt shook his head.
"Cair Epciala."
Another shake of the head.
"A slaughter," said the officer, looking at the stairs. "A bloodbath. Well, he who lives by the sword. Furthermore, you've saved the hangman work. You've travelled a long way, Witcher."
Geralt didn't comment. Ciri sniffed loudly and wiped her nose with her wrist. Yennefer gave her a scolding look. The Nilfgaardian also noticed that and smiled.
"You've travelled a long way," he repeated.
"You've come here from the end of the world, following her and for her sake, even if only for that reason you deserve something. Lord Dorido?"
"Yes, Your Imperial Highness."
The Witcher wasn't surprised.
"Please find a discreet chamber in which I shall be able to converse completely undisturbed with Sir Geralt of Rivia. During that time, please offer all possible comforts and services to the two ladies, under vigilant and unremitting guard."
"Yes, sir, Your Imperial Majesty."
"Sir Geralt, please follow me."
The Witcher stood up. He glanced at Yennefer and Ciri, wanting to calm them and warn them not to do anything foolish. But it wasn't necessary. They were both terribly tired and resigned.
"You've travelled a long way," repeated Emiabar Emeris Dithwin Athan Incarn Ep Morvuth,
the white flame dancing on the barrows of his enemies, removing his helmet.
"I'm not sure," Geralt calmly replied, "if you haven't travelled further, Dooney."
"You've recognised me. Well, well." The Emperor smiled. "And they say the lack of a beard and my way of holding myself have changed me utterly. Many of the people who used to see me earlier in Sintra came to Nilfgaard later and saw me during audiences, and no one recognised me. But you only saw me once, and that was 16 years ago. Did I become so embedded in your memory?"
"I wouldn't have recognised you. You have indeed changed greatly. I simply worked out who you were, some time ago. I guessed, not without help and a hint from someone else, what role incest played in Ciri's family, in her blood. I even dreamed about the most awful, the most hideous incest imaginable in a gruesome nightmare. And well, here you are in person."
"You can barely stand," said Emir coldly, "and deliberate impertinence is making you even more unsteady. You may sit in the presence of the Emperor. I grant you that privilege.
until the end of your days. Geralt sat down with relief. Emir continued to stand, leaning against a carved wardrobe. You saved my daughter's life, he said, several times. I thank you for that, on behalf of myself and posterity.
You disarm me.
Cirilla will go to Nilfgaard. Emir was not bothered by the mockery. She will become empress at a suitable moment, in precisely the same way that dozens of girls have become and do become queens, meaning almost not knowing their spouses, often not having a good opinion of them on the basis of their first encounter, often disappointed by the first days and first nights of marriage. Cirilla would be the first. Geralt refrained from comment. Cirilla, continued the Emperor, will be happy, like most of the queens I was talking about. It will come with time. Cirilla will transfer the love that I do not demand at all onto the son I will beget with her. An archduke, and later an emperor. An emperor who will beget a son. A son who will be ruler of the world and will save the world from destruction. Thus speaks the prophecy, whose exact contents only I know. Naturally, the White Flame continued, Cirilla will never find out who I am. The secret will die, along with those who know it.
That's clear, Geralt nodded. It can't be clearer.
You cannot fail to detect the hand of destiny in all of this, Emir said after a long time. All of this, including your activities from the very beginning.
I see rather the hand of Vilgefortz, for it was he who directed you to Sintra, wasn't it? When you were the enchanted Urkion, he made Pavetta. You're stumbling in the dark.
Emir interrupted brutally, tossing his salamander-decorated cloak over his shoulder.
You don't know anything, and you don't have to know. I didn't ask you here to tell you my life story or to excuse myself before you. The only thing you have earned is the assurance that the girl will not be harmed. I have no debts towards you, Witcher. None. Yes, you do,
Geralt interrupted brutally.
You broke the contract. You went back on your word. They are debts, Dooney. You broke a promise as a princeling, and you have a debt as an emperor, with imperial interest, 10 years' worth.
Is that all?
That is all. For only that is owed to me, nothing more. But nothing less, either. I was to collect the child when it turned 6. You didn't wait for the promised date. You planned to steal it from me before it passed. The destiny you keep talking about sneered at you, however. You tried to fight that destiny for the following 10 years. Now you have her. You have Ciri, your own daughter, whom you once basely deprived of parents, and with whom you now mean to vilely beget incestuous children. Without demanding love, rightly as a matter of fact, you do not deserve her love. Just between us, Dooney, I don't know how you'll manage to look her in the eyes.
The end justifies the means, Emir said dully. What I'm doing for posterity, to save the world. If the world is to be saved like that.
The Witcher lifted his head. It will be better for it to perish. Believe me, Dooney, it'd be better if it perished.
You're pale, Emir Var Emrys said almost gently. Don't get so excited, for you are liable to faint.
He moved away from the wardrobe, selected a chair and sat down. The Witcher's head was indeed spinning.
The Iron Urkion, the Emperor began calmly and quietly, was to be a way of forcing my father to collaborate with the usurper. It was after the coup. My father, the overthrown Emperor, was in prison and being tortured. He couldn't be broken, so another way was tried. A sorcerer, hired by the usurper, changed me into a monster in front of my father's eyes. The sorcerer added a little something on his own initiative, namely, humour. Emir, in our language, means an Urkion, an old name for a hedgehog. My father didn't allow himself to be broken, and so they murdered him. I, meanwhile, was released into a forest amidst mockery and scorn, and dogs were set on me. I survived.
I wasn't hunted too seriously, for it wasn't known that the sorcerer had botched his work and that my human form returned at night. Fortunately, I knew several people of whose loyalty I could be certain, and at that time I was, for your information, 13. I had to flee the country, and the fact that I ought to search for a